Then I saw in my dream that the interpreter took Christian by the hand and led him into a place where was a fire burning against a wall, and one standing by it, always casting much water upon it to quench it. Yet did the fire burn higher and hotter. Then said Christian,
What means this?
This fire is the work of grace that is wrought in the heart. He that casts water upon it to extinguish and put it out is the devil. But in that thou seest the fire notwithstanding burn higher and hotter, thou shalt also see the reason of that.
So he had him about to the backside of the wall, where he saw a man with a vessel of oil in his hand, of the which he did also continually cast, but secretly, into the fire.
What means this?
This is Christ, who continually with the oil of his grace maintains the work already begun in the heart, by the means of which, notwithstanding what the devil can do, the souls of his people prove gracious still. And in that thou sawest that the man stood behind the wall to maintain the fire, that is to teach thee that it is hard for the tempted to see how this work of grace is maintained in the soul.
I saw also that the interpreter took him again by the hand and led him into a pleasant place where was builded a stately palace, beautiful to behold, at the sight of which Christian was greatly delighted. He saw also upon the top thereof certain persons walking who were clothed all in gold.
May we go in thither?
Then the interpreter took him and led him up towards the door of the palace. And behold, at the door stood a great company of men, as desirous to go in, but durst not. There also sat a man at a little distance from the door, at a table side, with a book and his inkhorn before him, to take the name of him that should enter therein. He saw also that in the doorway stood many men in armor to keep it, being resolved to do the men that would enter what hurt and mischief they could. Now was Christian somewhat in amaze. At last, when every man started back for fear of the armed men, Christian saw a man of a very stout countenance come up to the man that sat there to write, saying,
Set down my name, sir.
The which, when he had done, he saw the man draw his sword, and put a helmet upon his head, and rush toward the door upon the armed men, who laid upon him with deadly force. But the man, not at all discouraged, fell to cutting and hacking most fiercely. So after he had received and given many wounds to those that attempted to keep him out, he cut his way through them all, and pressed forward into the palace, at which there was a pleasant voice heard from those that were within, even of those that walked upon the top of the palace, saying, Come in, come in, eternal glory thou shalt win. So he went in, and was clothed with such garments as they. Then Christian smiled and said,
I think verily I know the meaning of this. Now, let me go hence.
Nay, stay, till I have showed thee a little more, and after that thou shalt go on thy way.
So he took him by the hand again, and led him into a very dark room, where there sat a man in an iron cage.
Oh.
Now the man, to look on, seemed very sad. He sat with his eyes looking down to the ground, his hands folded together, and he sighed as if he would break his heart. Then said Christian,
What means this?
At which the interpreter bid him talk with the man.
What art thou?
I am what I was not once.
What wast thou once?
I was once a fair and flourishing professor, both in my own eyes and also in the eyes of others. I once was, as I thought, fair for the celestial city, and had then even joy at the thoughts that I should get thither.
Well, but what art thou now?
I am now a man of despair, and am shut up in it, as in this iron cage. I cannot get out. Oh, now I cannot.
But how camest thou in this condition?
I left off to watch and be sober. I laid the reins upon the neck of my lusts. I sinned against the light of the Word and the goodness of God. I have grieved the Spirit, and He is gone. I tempted the devil, and he has come to me. I have provoked God to anger, and he has left me. I have so hardened my heart that I cannot repent.
But is there no hope for such a man as this?
Ask him.
Nay, pray, sir, do you.
Is there no hope, but you must be kept in the iron cage of despair?
No, none at all.
Why? The Son of the Blessed is very pitiful.
I have crucified him to myself afresh. I have despised his person. I have despised his righteousness. I have counted his blood an unholy thing. I have done despite to the Spirit of grace. Therefore, I have shut myself out of all the promises, and there now remains to me nothing but threatenings, dreadful threatenings, fearful threatenings of certain judgment and fiery indignation, which shall devour me as an adversary.
For what did you bring yourself into this condition?
For the lusts, pleasures, and profits of this world, in the enjoyment of which I did then promise myself much delight. But now every one of those things also bite me and gnaw me like a burning worm.
But canst thou not now repent and turn?
God hath denied me repentance. His word gives me no encouragement to believe. Yea, himself hath shut me up in this iron cage. Nor can all the men in the world let me out. O eternity, eternity! How shall I grapple with the misery that I must meet with in eternity?
Let this man's misery be remembered by thee, and be an everlasting caution to thee.
Well, this is fearful. God help me to watch and be sober, and to pray that I may shun the cause of this man's misery. Sir, is it not time for me to go on my way now?
Tarry till I show thee one thing more. Then thou shalt go on thy way.
So he took Christian by the hand again, and led him into a chamber, where there was one rising out of bed. And as he put on his raiment, he shook and trembled. Then said Christian,
Why doth this man thus tremble?
The interpreter then bid him tell to Christian the reason of his so doing. So he began and said,
This night, as I was in my sleep, I dreamed, and behold, the heavens grew exceeding black. Also, it thundered and lightened in most fearful wise, and it put me into an agony. So I looked up in my dream, and saw the clouds racked at an unusual rate, upon which I heard a great sound of a trumpet, and saw also a man sit upon a cloud, attended with the thousands of heaven. They were all in flaming fire. Also the heavens were in a burning flame. I heard then a voice saying, Arise, ye dead, and come to judgment. And with that the rocks rent, the graves opened, and the dead that were therein came forth. Some of them were exceeding glad, and looked upward, and some sought to hide themselves under the mountains. Then I saw the man that sat upon the cloud open the book, and bid the world draw near. Yet there was, by reason of a fierce flame which issued out and came from before him, a convenient distance betwixt him and them, as betwixt the judge and the prisoners at the bar. I heard it also proclaimed to them that attended on the man that sat on the cloud, Gather together the tares, the chaff, and stubble, and cast them into the burning lake. And with that, the bottomless pit opened, just whereabout I stood, out of the mouth of which there came, in an abundant manner, smoke and coals of fire, with hideous noises. Oh! It was also said to the same persons, gather my wheat into the garner. And with that, I saw many catched up and carried away into the clouds. But I was left behind. I also sought to hide myself, but I could not. For the man that sat upon the clouds still kept his eye upon me. My sins also came into my mind, and my conscience did accuse me on every side. Oh. Upon this, I awaked from my sleep.
But what is it that made you so afraid of this sight?
Why, I thought that the day of judgment was come, and that I was not ready for it. But this frighted me most, that the angels gathered up several and left me behind. Also, the pit of hell opened her mouth just where I stood. My conscience, too, afflicted me. And, as I thought, the judge had always his eye upon me, showing indignation in his countenance.
Hast thou considered all these things?
Yes, and they put me in hope and fear.
Well, keep all things so in thy mind that they may be as a goad in thy sides to prick thee forward in the way thou must go.
Then Christian began to gird up his loins and to address himself to his journey. Then said the interpreter,
the Comforter be always with thee, good Christian, to guide thee in the way that leads to the city.
So Christian went on his way, saying,
here I have seen things rare and profitable, things pleasant, dreadful, things to make me stable in what I have begun to take in hand. Then let me think on them, and understand wherefore they showed me were, and let me be thankful, O good interpreter, to thee.
Now I saw in my dream that the highway up which Christian was to go was fenced on either side with a wall, and that wall was called Salvation. Up this way, therefore, did burdened Christian run, but not without great difficulty, because of the load on his back. He ran thus till he came at a place somewhat ascending, and upon that place stood a cross, and a little below, in the bottom, a sepulchre. So I saw in my dream that just as Christian came up with the cross, his burden loosed from off his shoulders, fell from off his back, began to tumble, and so continued to do, till it came to the mouth of the sepulchre, where it fell in, and I saw it no more. Then was Christian glad and lightsome, and said with a merry heart,
he hath given me rest by his sorrow, and life by his death.
Then he stood still a while to look and wonder, for it was very surprising to him that the sight of the cross should thus ease him of his burden. He looked, therefore, and looked again, even till the springs that were in his head sent the waters down his cheeks. Now as he stood looking and weeping, behold, three shining ones came to him and saluted him.
Peace be unto thee.
So the first said to him,
thy sins be forgiven thee.
The second stripped him of his rags and clothed him with change of raiment. The third also set a mark on his forehead, and gave him a roll with a seal upon it, which he bade him look on as he ran, and that he should give it in at the celestial gate. So they went their way. Then Christian gave three leaps for joy, and went on singing,
thus far I did come, laden with my sin, nor could aught ease the grief that I was in, till I came hither. What a place is this! Must here be the beginning of my bliss? Must here the burden fall from off my back? Must here the strings that bound it to me crack? Blessed cross, blessed sepulchre, blessed rather be the man that was there put to shame for me.
I saw then in my dream that he went on thus, even until he came at a bottom, where he saw, a little out of the way, three men fast asleep, with fetters upon their heels. The name of the one was Simple, another Sloth, and the third Presumption. Christian, then seeing them lie in this case, went to them, if peradventure he might awake them, and cried,
You are like them that sleep on the top of a mast, for the Dead Sea is under you, a gulf that hath no bottom. Awake, therefore, and come away. Be willing also, and I will help you off with your irons. If he that goeth about like a roaring lion comes by, you will certainly become a prey to his teeth.
With that they looked upon him, and began to reply in this sort. Simple said,
I see no danger.
Sloth said,
Yet a little more sleep.
And Presumption said,
Every fat must stand upon its own bottom. What is the answer else that I should give thee?
And so they lay down to sleep again, and Christian went on his way. Yet was he troubled to think that men in that danger should so little esteem the kindness of him that so freely offered to help them, both by awakening of them, counseling of them, and proffering to help them off with their irons. Now by this time he was come to the arbor again, where for a while he sat down and wept. But at last, as Christian would have it, looking sorrowfully down under the settle, there he espied his roll, the which he with trembling and haste catched up and put into his bosom. But who can tell how joyful this man was when he had gotten his roll again? For this roll was the assurance of his life and acceptance at the desired haven. Therefore he laid it up in his bosom, gave thanks to God for directing his eye to the place where it lay, and with joy and tears betook himself again to his journey. But oh, how nimbly now did he go up the rest of the hill! Yet before he got up, the sun went down upon Christian, and this made him again recall the vanity of his sleeping to his remembrance, and thus he again began to condole with himself.
Oh, thou sinful sleep, how for thy sake am I like to be benighted in my journey? I must walk without the sun. Darkness must cover the path of my feet, and I must hear the noise of the doleful creatures because of my sinful sleep.
Now also he remembered the story that Mistrust and Timorous had told him of, how they were frighted with the sight of the lions. Then said Christian to himself again,
These beasts range in the night for their prey, and if they should meet with me in the dark, how should I shift them? How should I escape being by them torn in pieces?
Thus he went on his way. But while he was thus bewailing his unhappy miscarriage, he lift up his eyes. Behold, there was a very stately palace before him, the name of which was Beautiful, and it stood just by the highway side. Now I saw in my dream that he made haste and went forward, that if possible he might get lodging there. Now before he had gone far, he entered into a very narrow passage, which was about a furlong off the porter's lodge. Looking very narrowly before him as he went, he espied two lions in the way.
Now I see the dangers that Mistrust and Timorous were driven back by.
The lions were chained, but he saw not the chains. Then he was afraid, and thought also himself to go back after them, for he thought nothing but death was before him. But the porter at the lodge, whose name is Watchful, perceiving that Christian made a halt as if he would go back, cried unto him, saying,
Is thy strength so small? Fear not the lions, for they are chained, and are placed there for trial of faith where it is, and for discovery of those that have none. Keep in the midst of the path, no hurt shall come unto thee.
Then I saw that he went on, trembling for fear of the lions, but taking good heed to the directions of the porter. He heard them roar, but they did him no harm. Then he clapped his hands and went on till he came and stood before the gate where the porter was. Then said Christian to the porter,
Sir, what house is this? And may I lodge here tonight?
This house was built by the Lord of the Hill, and he built it for the relief and security of pilgrims.
The porter also asked him whence he was and whither he was going.
I am come from the city of destruction, and am going to Mount Zion. But because the sun is now set, I desire, if I may, to lodge here tonight.
What is your name?
My name is now Christian, but my name at the first was Graceless. I came of the race of Japheth, whom God will persuade to dwell in the tents of Shem.
But how doth it happen that you come so late? The sun is set.
I had been here sooner, but that wretched man that I am, I slept in the arbor that stands on the hillside. Nay, I had, notwithstanding that, been here much sooner, but that in my sleep I lost my evidence, and came without it to the brow of the hill. And then, feeling for it, and finding it not, I was forced with sorrow of heart to go back to the place where I slept my sleep, where I found it. And now I am come.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will call out one of the virgins of this place, who will, if she likes your talk, bring you into the rest of the family, according to the rules of the house.
So watchful the porter rang a bell, at the sound of which came out at the door of the house a grave and beautiful damsel named Discretion, and asked why she was called.
This man is in a journey from the city of destruction to Mount Zion, but being weary and benighted, he asked me if he might lodge here tonight. So I told him I would call for thee, who, after discourse had with him, mayest do as seemeth thee good, even according to the law of the house.
Then she asked him whence he was, and whither he was going, and he told her. She asked him also how he got into the way, and he told her. Then she asked him what he had seen and met with in the way, and he told her. And at last she asked his name. So he said,
It is Christian. And I have so much the more a desire to lodge here tonight, because, by what I perceive, this place was built by the Lord of the Hill for the relief and security of pilgrims.
So she smiled, but the water stood in her eyes. And after a little pause, she said,
I will call forth two or three more of the family.
So she ran to the door and called out Prudence, Piety, and Charity, who, after a little more discourse with him, had him into the family. And many of them, meeting him at the threshold of the house, said,
Come in, thou blessed of the Lord. This house was built by the Lord of the Hill on purpose to entertain such pilgrims in.
Then he bowed his head and followed them into the house. So when he was come in and sat down, they gave him something to drink, and consented together that, until supper was ready, some of them should have some particular discourse with Christian for the best improvement of time. And they appointed Piety and Prudence and Charity to discourse with him. And thus they began.
Come, good Christian, since we have been so loving to you to receive you in our house this night, let us, if perhaps we may better ourselves thereby, talk with you of all things that have happened to you in your pilgrimage.
Oh, with a very good will, and I am glad that you are so well disposed.
What moved you at first to betake yourself to a pilgrim's life?
I was driven out of my native country by a dreadful sound that was in mine ears, to wit, that unavoidable destruction did attend me if I abode in that place where I was.
But how did it happen that you came out of your country this way?
It was as God would have it, for when I was under the fears of destruction, I did not know whither to go. But by chance there came a man, even to me, as I was trembling and weeping, whose name is Evangelist.
Keep that light in your eye, and go up directly thereto. So shalt thou see the gate, at which, when thou knockest, it shall be told thee what thou shalt do.
And he directed me to the wicket gate, which else I should never have found, and so set me into the way that hath led me directly to this house.
But did you not come by the house of the interpreter?
Yes, and did see such things there, the remembrance of which will stick by me as long as I live. Especially three things, to wit, how Christ, in despite of Satan, maintains his work of grace in the heart. How the man had sinned himself quite out of hope of God's mercy. And also the dream of him that thought in his sleep the day of judgment was come.
This night, as I was in my sleep, I dreamed, and behold, the heavens grew exceeding black. Also, it thundered and lightened in most fearful wise, and it put me into an agony.
Why, did you hear him tell his dream?
Yes, and what a dreadful one it was. Oh. I thought it made my heart ache as he was telling of it. But yet I am glad I heard it.
Was that all that you saw at the house of the interpreter?
No. He took me and had me where he showed me a stately palace, and how the people were clad in gold that were in it, and how there came a venturous man and cut his way through the armed men that stood at the door to keep him out, and how he was bid to come in and win eternal glory. Methought those things did ravish my heart. I would have stayed there at that good man's house a 12 month, but that I knew I had further to go.
And what saw you else in the way?
Saw? Why, I went but a little further, and I saw one, as I thought in my mind, hang, bleeding upon the tree. And the very sight of him made my burden fall off my back, for I groaned under a very heavy burden. But then it fell down from off me. It was a very strange thing to me, for I never saw such a thing before. Yea, and while I stood looking up, for then I could not forbear looking, 3 shining ones came to me.
Peace be unto thee.
One of them testified that my sins were forgiven me.
Thy sins be forgiven thee.
Another stripped me of my rags and gave me this embroidered coat which you see. And the third set the mark which you see in my forehead and gave me this sealed roll.
And with that he plucked it out of his bosom.
But you saw more than this, did you not?
The things that I have told you were the best. Yet some other matters I saw, as namely, I saw 3 men, Simple, Sloth, and Presumption, lie asleep a little out of the way as I came with irons upon their heels. But do you think I could awake them?
Get a little more sleep.
I also saw Formality and Hypocrisy come tumbling over the wall to go, as they pretended, to Zion.
We were born in the land of vain glory and are going for praise to Mount Zion.
But they were quickly lost, even as I myself did tell them, but they would not believe. But above all, I found it hard work to get up this hill, and as hard to come by the lion's mouths. And truly, if it had not been for the good man, the porter that stands at the gate, I do not know but that after all I might have gone back again. But now I thank God I am here, and I thank you for receiving of me.
Then Prudence thought good to ask him a few questions, and desired his answer to them.
Do you not think sometimes of the country from whence you came?
Yes, but with much shame and detestation. Truly, if I had been mindful of that country from whence I came out, I might have had opportunity to have returned. But but now I desire a better country, that is, an heavenly.
Do you not yet bear away with you some of the things that then you were conversant withal?
Yes, but greatly against my will. Especially my inward and carnal cogitations, with which all my countrymen, as well as myself, were delighted. But now all those things are my grief, and might I but choose mine own things, I would choose never to think of those things more. But when I would be doing of that which is best, that which is worst is with me.
Do you not find sometimes, as if those things were vanquished, which at other times are your perplexity?
Yes, but that is seldom. But they are to me golden hours in which such things happen to me.
Can you remember by what means you find your annoyances at times as if they were vanquished?
Yes. When I think what I saw at the cross, that will do it. And when I look upon my broidered coat, that will do it. Also, when I look into the roll that I carry in my bosom, that will do it. And when my thoughts wax warm about whither I am going, that will do it.
And what is it that makes you so desirous to go to Mount Zion?
Why, there I hope to see him alive that did hang upon the cross. And there I hope to be rid of all those things that to this day are in me an annoyance to me. There they say there is no death. And there I shall dwell with such company as I like best. For to tell you the truth, I love him, because I was by him eased of my burden, and I am weary of my inward sickness. I would fain be where I shall die no more, and with the company that shall continually cry, Holy, holy, holy.
Then said Charity to Christian,
Have you a family? Are you a married man?
I have a wife and 4 small children.
And why did you not bring them along with you?
Then Christian wept and said,
Oh, how willingly would I have done it. But they were all of them utterly averse to my going on pilgrimage.
But you should have talked to them and have endeavored to have shown them the danger of being behind.
Oh. So I did. I told them also of what God had shown to me of the destruction of our city. But I seemed to them as one that mocked, and they believed me not.
And did you pray to God that he would bless your counsel to them?
Yes, and that with much affection. For you must think that my wife and poor children
were very dear unto me.
But did you tell them of your own sorrow and fear of destruction? For I suppose that destruction was visible enough to you.
Yes, over and over and over. They might also see my fears in my countenance, in my tears, and also in my trembling under the apprehension of the judgment that had hang over our heads. But all was not sufficient to prevail with them to come with me.
But what could they say for themselves? Why they came not?
Why, my wife was afraid of losing this world, and my children were given to the foolish delights of youth. So what by one thing and what by another, they left me to wander in this manner alone.
But did you not, with your vain life, damp all that you by words used by way of persuasion to bring them away with you?
Indeed, I cannot commend my life, for I am conscious to myself of my many failings therein. I know also that a man by his conversation may soon overthrow what by argument or persuasion he doth labor to fasten upon others for their good. Yet this I can say, I was very wary of giving them occasion, by any unseemly action, to make them averse to going on pilgrimage. Yea, for this very thing they would tell me that I was too precise, and that I denied myself of things for their sakes in which they saw no evil. Nay, I think I may say that if what they saw in me did hinder them, it was my great tenderness in sinning against God, or of doing any wrong to my neighbor.
Indeed, Cain hated his brother, because his own works were evil, and his brother's righteous. And if thy wife and children have been offended with thee for this, they thereby show themselves to be implacable to good, and thou hast delivered thy soul from their blood.
Now I saw in my dream that thus they sat talking together until supper was ready. So when they had made ready, they sat down to meat. Now the table was furnished with fat things and with wine that was well refined, and all their talk at the table was about the Lord of the Hill, as namely about what he had done, and wherefore he did what he did, and why he had builded that house. And by what they said, I perceived that he had been a great warrior, and had fought with and slain him that had the power of death, but not without great danger to himself, which made me love him the more. For as they said, and as I believe, said Christian, he did it with the loss of much blood. But that which put glory of grace into all he did was that he did it out of pure love to his country. And besides, there were some of them of the household that said they had been and spoke with him since he did die on the cross, and they have attested that they had it from his own lips, that he is such a lover of poor pilgrims that the like is not to be found from the east to the west. They moreover gave an instance of what they affirmed, and that was, he had stripped himself of his glory, that he might do this for the poor, and that they heard him say and affirm, that he would not dwell in the mountain of Zion alone. They said, moreover, that he had made many pilgrims princes, though by nature they were beggars born, and their original had been the dunghill. Thus they discoursed together till late at night, and after they had committed themselves to their Lord for protection, they betook themselves to rest. The pilgrim they laid in a large upper chamber, whose window opened towards the sun rising. The name of the chamber was Peace, where he slept till break of day. And then he awoke and sang,
Where am I now? Is this the love and care of Jesus for the men that pilgrims are? Thus to provide that I should be forgiven and dwell already the next door to heaven.
So in the morning they all got up, and after some more discourse, they told him that he should not depart till they had shown him the rarities of that place. And first they had him into the study, where they showed him records of the greatest antiquity, in which, as I remember my dream, they showed him first the pedigree of the Lord of the Hill, that he was the son of the Ancient of Days, and came by that eternal generation. Here also was more fully recorded the acts that he had done, and the names of many hundreds that he had taken into his service, and how he had placed them in such habitations that could neither by length of days nor decays of nature be dissolved. Then they read to him some of the worthy acts that some of his servants had done, as how they had subdued kingdoms,
wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, and turned to flight the armies of the aliens.
Then they read again in another part of the records of the house, where it was showed how willing their Lord was to receive into his favor any, even any, though they in time past had offered great affronts to his person and proceedings. Here also were several other histories of many other famous things, of all which Christian had a view, as of things both ancient and modern, together with prophecies and predictions of things that have their certain accomplishment, both to the dread and amazement of enemies, and the comfort and solace of pilgrims. The next day they took him and had him into the armory, where they showed him all manner of furniture which their Lord had provided for pilgrims, as sword, shield, helmet, breastplate, all prayer, and shoes that would not wear out. And there was here enough of this to harness out as many men for the service of their Lord as there be stars in the heaven for multitude. They also showed him some of the engines with which some of his servants had done wonderful things. They showed him Moses' rod, the hammer and nail with which Jael slew Sisera, the pitchers, trumpets, and lamps, too, with which Gideon had put to flight the armies of Midian. Then they showed him the ox's goad, wherewith Shamgar slew 600 men. They also showed him the jawbone with which Samson did such mighty feats. They showed him, moreover, the sling and stone with which David slew Goliath of Gath, and the sword also with which their Lord will kill the man of sin in the day that he shall rise up to the prey. They showed him besides many excellent things, with which Christian was much delighted. This done, they went to their rest again. Then I saw in my dream that on the morrow he got up to go forward, but they desired him to stay till the next day also. Then, said they,
"We will, if the day be clear, show you the delectable mountains, which will yet further add to your comfort, because they are nearer the desired haven than the place where at present we are."
So he consented and stayed. When the morning was up, they had him up to the top of the house and bid him look south, and so he did. Behold, at a great distance, he saw a most pleasant mountainous country, beautified with woods, vineyards, fruits of all sorts, flowers also, with springs and fountains, very delectable to behold. Then he asked the name of the country.
"It is Emmanuel's land, and it is as common as this hill is, to and for all the pilgrims. And when thou comest there from thence, thou mayest see to the gate of the celestial city, as the shepherds that live there shall make appear."
Now he bethought himself of setting forward, and they were willing he should.
"But first, let us go again into the armory."
So they did, and when they came there, they harnessed him from head to foot with what was of proof, lest perhaps he should meet with assaults in the way. He being therefore thus accoutred, walketh out with his friends to the gate, and there he asked the porter if he saw any pilgrims pass by. Then the porter answered,
"Yes. Pray, did you know him?"
"I asked him his name, and he told me it was Faithful."
"Oh, I know him. He is my townsman, my near neighbor. He comes from the place where I was born. How far do you think he may be before?"
"He has got by this time below the hill."
"Well, good porter, the Lord be with thee, and add to all thy blessings much increase for the kindness that thou hast showed to me."
Then he began to go forward, but discretion, piety, charity, and prudence would accompany him down to the foot of the hill. So they went on together, reiterating their former discourses, till they came down the hill. Then said Christian,
"As it was difficult coming up, so far as I can see, it is dangerous going down."
"Yes, so it is, for it is a hard matter for a man to go down into the valley of humiliation as thou art now, and to catch no slip by the way. Therefore we come out to accompany thee down the hill."
So he began to go down, very warily, yet he caught a slip or two. Then I saw in my dream that these good companions, when Christian was gone to the bottom of the hill, gave him a loaf of bread, a bottle of wine, and a cluster of raisins. And then he went on his way. But now, in this valley of humiliation, poor Christian was hard put to it, for he had gone but a little way before he espied a foul fiend coming over the field to meet him. His name is Apollyon. Then did Christian begin to be afraid, and to cast in his mind whether to go back or to stand his ground. But he considered again that he had no armor for his back, and therefore thought that to turn the back to him might give him the greater advantage with ease to pierce him with his darts. Therefore, he resolved to venture and stand his ground.
For had I no more in mine eye than the saving of my life, it would be the best way to stand.
So he went on, and Apollyon met him. Now the monster was hideous to behold. He was clothed with scales like a fish, and they are his pride. He had wings like a dragon, feet like a bear. And out of his belly came fire and smoke, and his mouth was as the mouth of a lion. When he was come up to Christian, he beheld him with a disdainful countenance, and thus began to question with him.
Whence come you, and whither are you bound?
I am come from the city of destruction, which is the place of all evil, and am going to the city of Zion.
By this I perceive thou art one of my subjects. For all that country is mine, and I am the prince and god of it. How is it, then, that thou hast run away from thy king? Were it not that I hope thou mayest do me more service, I would strike thee now at one blow to the ground.
I was born, indeed, in your dominions. But your service was hard, and your wages such as a man could not live on. For the wages of sin is death. Therefore, when I was come to years, I did, as other considerate persons do, look out, if perhaps I might mend myself.
There is no prince that will thus lightly lose his subjects. Neither will I as yet lose thee. But since thou complainest of thy service and wages, be content to go back. What our country will afford, I do here promise to give thee.
But I have let myself to another, even to the king of princes, and how can I with fairness go back with thee?
Thou hast done in this according to the proverb. Changed a bad for a worse. But it is ordinary for those that have professed themselves his servants, after a while to give him the slip and return again to me. Do thou, too, and all shall be well.
I have given him my faith, and sworn my allegiance to him. How then can I go back from this, and not be hanged as a traitor?
Thou didst the same to me, and yet I am willing to pass by all. If now thou wilt yet turn again, and go back.
What I promised thee was in my nunnage. And besides, I count the prince under whose banner now I stand as able to absolve me. Yea, and to pardon also what I did as to my compliance with thee. And besides, O thou destroying Apollyon, to speak truth, I like his service, his wages, his servants, his government, his company and country better than thine. Therefore, leave off to persuade me further. I am his servant, and I will follow him.
Consider again, when thou art in cool blood, what thou art like to meet with in the way that thou goest. Thou knowest that for the most part, his servants come to an ill end, because they are transgressors against me and my ways. How many of them have been put to shameful death? And besides, thou countest his service better than mine? Whereas, he never came yet from the place where he is to deliver any that served him out of their hands. But as for me, how many times, as all the world very well knows, have I delivered, either by power from. Those that faithfully served me, from him and his, will be taken by them. And so, I will deliver thee.
His forbearing at present to deliver them is on purpose, to try their love, whether they will cleave to him to the end. And as for the ill end thou sayest they come to, that is most glorious in their account. For present deliverance they do not much expect it, for they stay for their glory. And then they shall have it when their prince comes in his, and the glory of the angels.
Thou hast already been unfaithful in thy service to him. And how dost thou think to receive wages of him?
Wherein, O Apollyon, have I been unfaithful to him?
Thou didst faint at first setting out, when thou wast almost choked in the gulf of despond. Thou didst attempt wrong ways to be rid of thy burden, whereas thou shouldest have stayed till thy prince had taken it off. Thou didst sinfully sleep and lose thy choice thing. Thou wast also almost persuaded to go back at the sight of the lions. And when thou talkest of thy journey, and of what thou hast heard and seen, thou art inwardly desirous of vain glory in all that thou sayest or doest.
All this is true, and much more which thou hast left out. But the prince whom I serve and honor is merciful, and ready to forgive. But besides, these infirmities possessed me in thy country, for there I sucked them in. And I have groaned under them, been sorry for them, and have obtained pardon of my prince.
Him and enemy to this prince! I hate his person, his laws, and people! I have come out on purpose to withstand thee!
Apollyon, beware what you do, for I am in the king's highway, the way of holiness. Therefore, take heed to yourself.
Then Apollyon straddled quite over the whole breadth of the way and said,
I am void of fear in this matter. Prepare myself to die. For I swear by the infernal dead that thou shalt go no further. Here will I spill thy soul.
And with that, he threw a flaming dart at his breast. But Christian had a shield in his hand, with which he caught it, and so prevented the danger of that. Then did Christian draw, for he saw that it was time to bestir him. Apollyon is fast made up, throwing darts as thick as hail, by the which, notwithstanding all that Christian could do to avoid it, Apollyon wounded him in his head, his hand, and foot. This made Christian give a little back. Apollyon, therefore, followed his work amain. Christian again took courage and resisted as manfully as he could. This sore combat lasted for above half a day, even till Christian was almost quite spent. For you must know that Christian, by reason of his wounds, must needs grow weaker and weaker. Then Apollyon, spying his opportunity, began to gather up close to Christian, and wrestling with him, gave him a dreadful fall. With that, Christian's sword flew out of his hand. Then said Apollyon,
I am sure of thee now.
And with that, he had almost pressed him to death, so that Christian began to despair of life. But as God would have it, while Apollyon was fetching of his last blow, thereby to make a full end of this good man, Christian nimbly stretched out his hand for his sword and caught it, saying,
Rejoice not against me, O my enemy. When I fall, I shall arise.
With that, he gave him a deadly thrust, which made him give back one that had received his mortal wound. Christian, perceiving that, made at him again, saying,
Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us.
That Apollyon spread forth his dragon's wings and sped him away. But Christian, for a season, saw him no more. In this combat, no man can imagine, unless he had seen and heard as I did, what yelling and hideous roaring Apollyon made all the time of the fight. He spake like a dragon, and on the other side, what sighs and groans burst from Christian's heart. I never saw him all the while give so much as one pleasant look, till he perceived he had wounded Apollyon with his two-edged sword. Then indeed he did smile and look upward, but it was the dreadfulest sight that ever I saw. A more unequal match can hardly be. Christian must fight an angel. But you see, the valiant man, by handling sword and shield, that make him, though a dragon, quit the field. So when the battle was over, Christian said,
I will here give thanks to him that delivered me out of the mouth of the lion, to him that had helped me against Apollyon. Great Beelzebub, the captain of this fiend, designed my ruin. Therefore to this end he sent him harnessed out, and he with rage that hellish was did fiercely me engage. But blessed Michael helped me, and I by dint of sword did quickly make him fly. Therefore to him let me give lasting praise, and thank and bless his holy name always.
Then there came to him a hand with some of the leaves of the tree of life, the which Christian took and applied to the wounds that he had received in the battle, and was healed immediately. He also sat down in that place to eat bread and to drink of the bottle that was given him a little before. So, being refreshed, he addressed himself to his journey with his sword drawn in his hand. For he said,
I know not but some other enemy may be at hand.
But he met with no other affront from Apollyon quite through this valley. Now, at the end of this valley was another, called the Valley of the Shadow of Death, and Christian must needs go through it, because the way to the celestial city lay through the midst of it. Now this valley is a very solitary place. The prophet Jeremiah thus describes it: a wilderness, a land of deserts and of pits, a land of droughts and of the shadow of death, a land that no man but a Christian passed through, and where no man dwelt. Now here Christian was worse put to it than in his fight with Apollyon, as by the sequel you shall see. I saw then in my dream that when Christian was got to the borders of the shadow of death, there met him two men, children of them that brought up an evil report of the good land, making haste to go back, to whom Christian spake as follows.
Whither are you going?
Back! Back! We would have you to do so too, if either life or peace is prized by you.
Why? What's the matter?
Matter? We were going that way as you were going, and went as far as we durst. Indeed, we were almost past coming back. For had we gone a little further, we had not been here to bring the news to thee.
But what have you met with?
Why, we were almost in the Valley of the Shadow of Death. But that, by good hap, we looked before us, and saw the danger before we came to it.
But what have you seen?
Seen? Why, the valley itself, which is as dark as pitch. We also saw there hobgoblins, satyrs, and dragons of the pit. We also heard in that valley a continual howling and yelling, as of people under unutterable misery, who there sat bound in affliction and irons. Over that valley hangs the discouraging clouds of confusion. Death doth always spread its wings over it. In a word, it is every whit dreadful, being utterly without order.
Then I perceive not yet by what you have said, but that this is my way to the desired haven.
Be it thy way, we will not choose it for ours. Nay, not ours.
So they parted, and Christian went on his way, but still with his sword drawn in his hand, for fear lest he should be assaulted. I saw then in my dream, so far as this valley reached, there was on the right hand a very deep ditch. That ditch is it into which the blind have led the blind in all ages, and have both there miserably perished. Again, behold, on the left hand, there was a very dangerous quag, into which, if even a good man falls, he can find no bottom for his foot to stand on. Into that quag King David once did fall, and had no doubt therein been smothered, had not he that is able plucked him out. The pathway was here also exceeding narrow, and therefore good Christian was the more put to it. For when he sought in the dark to shun the ditch on the one hand, he was ready to tip over into the mire on the other. Also, when he sought to escape the mire, without great carefulness, he would be ready to fall into the ditch. Thus he went on, and I heard him here sigh bitterly, for besides the dangers mentioned above, the pathway was here so dark, and oft times when he lift up his foot to set forward, he knew not where or upon what he should set it next. Poor man, where art thou now? By day is night. Good man, be not cast down. Thou yet art right. Thy way to heaven lies by the gates of hell. Cheer up. Hold out. With thee it shall go well. About the midst of this valley I perceived the mouth of hell to be, and it stood also hard by the wayside.
Now, what shall I do?
And ever and anon the flame and smoke would come out in such abundance, with sparks and hideous noises, things that cared not for Christian's sword as Apollyon did before. And he was forced to put up his sword, and betake himself to another weapon called all prayer. So he cried in my hearing,
O Lord, I beseech thee, deliver my soul!
Thus he went on a great while, yet still the flames would be reaching towards him. Also he heard doleful voices and rushings to and fro, so that sometimes he thought he should be torn in pieces or trodden down like mire in the streets. This frightful sight was seen. These dreadful noises were heard by him for several miles together. And coming to a place where he thought he heard a company of fiends coming forward to meet him, he stopped and began to muse what he had best to do. Sometimes he had half a thought to go back. Then again he thought he might be halfway through the valley. He remembered also how he'd already vanquished many a danger, and that the danger of going back might be much more than for to go forward. So he resolved to go on. Yet the fiend seemed to come nearer and nearer. But when they were come even almost at him, he cried out with a most vehement voice,
I will walk in the strength of the Lord God.
So they gave back and came no further. One thing I would not let slip. I took notice that now poor Christian was so confounded that he did not know his own voice, and thus I perceived it. Just when he was come over against the mouth of the burning pit, one of the wicked ones got behind him and stepped up softly to him and whisperingly suggested many grievous blasphemies to him, which he verily thought had proceeded from his own mind. This put Christian more to it than anything that he had met before. Even to think that he should now blaspheme him that he had loved so much before. Yet if he could have helped it, he would not have done it. But he had not the discretion either to stop his ears or to know from whence these blasphemies came. When Christian had traveled in this disconsolate condition some considerable time, he thought he heard the voice of a man as going before him, saying,
Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me.
Then he was glad, and that for these reasons. First, because he gathered from thence that some who feared God were in this valley as well as himself. Secondly, for that he perceived God was with them, though in that dark and dismal state. And why not, thought he, with me? Though by reason of
the impediment that attends this place, I cannot perceive it.
Thirdly, for that he hoped, could he overtake them, to have company by and by. So he went on, and called to him that was before, but he knew not what to answer, for that he also thought to be alone. By and by the day broke. Then said Christian,
He hath turned the shadow of death into the morning.
Now the morning being come, he looked back, not out of desire to return, but to see by the light of the day what hazards he had gone through in the dark. So he saw more perfectly the ditch that was on the one hand, and the mire that was on the other. Also how narrow the way was which led betwixt them both. Also now he saw the hobgoblins and satyrs and dragons of the pit, but all afar off, for after break of day they came not nigh. Yet they were discovered to him, according to that which is written, He discovereth deep things out of darkness, and bringeth out to light the shadow of death. Now was Christian much affected with his deliverance from all the dangers of his solitary way, which dangers, though he feared them more before, yet he saw them more clearly now, because the light of the day made them conspicuous to him. And about this time the sun was rising, and this was another mercy to Christian. For you must note that though the first part of the valley of the shadow of death was dangerous, yet this second part, which he was yet to go, was, if possible, far more dangerous. For from the place where he now stood, even to the end of the valley, the way was all along set so full of snares, traps, gins, and nets here, and so full of pits, pitfalls, deep holes, and shelvings down there, that had it now been dark, as it was when he came the first part of the way, had he 1,000 souls, they had in reason been cast away. But, as I said just now, the sun was rising. Then said he,
His candle shineth upon my head, and by his light I walk through darkness.
In this light, therefore, he came to the end of the valley. Now I saw in my dream that at the end of this valley lay blood, bones, ashes, and mangled bodies of men, even of pilgrims that had gone this way formerly. And while I was musing what should be the reason, I espied a little before me a cave where two giants, Pope and Pagan, dwelt in old time, by whose power and tyranny the men whose bones, blood, ashes, and so forth lay there were cruelly put to death. But by this place Christian went without much danger, whereat I somewhat wondered. But I have learnt since that Pagan has been dead many a day, and as for the other, though he be yet alive, he is, by reason of age, and also of the many shrewd brushes that he met with in his younger days, grown so crazy and stiff in his joints that he can now do little more than sit in his cave's mouth, grinning at pilgrims as they go by, and biting his nails because he cannot come at them. So I saw that Christian went on his way. Yet at the sight of the old man that sat in the mouth of the cave, he could not tell what to think, especially because he spake to him, though he could not go after him, saying,
You will never mend till more of you be burned.
But he held his peace, and set a good face on it, so went by, and catched no hurt. Then sang Christian,
O world of wonders, I can say no less, that I should be preserved in that distress that I have met with here. Oh, blessed be that hand that from it hath delivered me. Dangers and darkness, devils, hell and sin did compass me while I this veil was in. Yea, snares and pits and traps and nets did lie my path about, that worthless silly I might have been catched, entangled, and cast down. But since I live, let Jesus wear the crown.
Now as Christian went on his way, he came to a little ascent, which was cast up on purpose that pilgrims might see before them. Up there, therefore, Christian went, and looking forward, he saw faithful before him upon his journey. Then said Christian aloud,
Ho, ho, so ho, stay, and I will be your companion.
At that, Faithful looked behind him, to whom Christian cried again,
Stay, stay till I come up to you.
But Faithful answered,
No, I am upon my life, and the avenger of blood is behind me.
At this, Christian was somewhat moved, and putting to all his strength, he quickly got up with Faithful, and did also overrun him. So the last was first. Then did Christian vaingloriously smile, because he had gotten the start of his brother. But not taking good heed to his feet, he suddenly stumbled and fell, and could not rise again until Faithful came up to help him. Then I saw in my dream they went very lovingly on together, and had sweet discourse of all that had happened to them in their pilgrimage. And thus Christian began,
My honored and well-beloved brother Faithful, I am glad that I have overtaken you, and that God has so tempered our spirits that we can walk as companions in this so pleasant a path.
I had thought, dear friend, to have had your company quite from our town, but you did get the start of me, wherefore I was forced to come thus much of the way alone.
How long did you stay in the City of Destruction before you set out after me on your pilgrimage?
Till I could stay no longer. For there was great talk, presently after you were gone out, that our city would, in short time, with fire from heaven, be burned down to the ground.
What? Did your neighbors talk so?
Yes. It was for a while in everybody's mouth.
What? And did no more of them but you come out to escape the danger?
Though there was, as I said, a great talk thereabout, yet I do not think they did firmly believe it. For in the heat of the discourse, I heard some of them deridingly speak of you and of your desperate journey, for so they called this your pilgrimage. But I did believe, and do still, that the end of our city will be with fire and brimstone from above. And therefore I have made my escape.
Did you hear no talk of neighbor Pliable?
Yes, Christian. I heard that he followed you till he came at the Slough of Despond, whereas some said he fell in, but he would not be known to have so done. But I am sure he was soundly bedabbled with that kind of dirt.
And what said the neighbors to him?
He hath, since his going back, been had greatly in derision, and that among all sorts of people. Some do mock and despise him, and scarce will any set him on work. He is now 7 times worse than if he had never gone out of the city.
But why should they be so set against him, since they also despise the way that he forsook?
Oh, they say, hang him, he's a turncoat. He was not true to his profession. I think God has stirred up even his enemies to hiss at him and make him a proverb, because he hath forsaken the way.
Had you no talk with him before you came out?
I met him once in the streets, but he leered away on the other side as one ashamed of what he had done. So I spake not to him.
Well, at my first setting out, I had hopes of that man. But now I fear he will perish in the overthrow of the city. For it has happened to him, according to the true proverb, the dog has turned to his own vomit again, and the sow that was washed to her wallowing in the mire.
These are my fears of him, too. But who can hinder that which will be?
Well, neighbor faithful, let us leave him, and talk of things that more immediately concern ourselves. Tell me, now, what have you met with in the way as you came? For I know you have met with some things, or else it may be writ for a wonder.
Well, I escaped the slough that I perceived you fell into, and got up to the gate without that danger. Only I met with one whose name was Wanton, who had like to have done me a mischief.
Oh, it was well you escaped her net. Joseph was hard put to it by her, and he escaped her as you did. But it had like to have cost him his life. But what did she do to you?
You cannot think but that you know something. What a flattering tongue she had. She lay at me hard to turn aside with her, promising me all manner of content.
Nay, she did not promise you the content of a good conscience.
You know what I mean. All carnal and fleshly content.
Thank God you have escaped her. The abhorred of the Lord shall fall into her ditch.
Nay, I know not whether I did wholly escape her or no.
Why? I trow you did not consent to her desires.
No, not to defile myself, for I remembered an old writing that I had seen which said, her steps take hold on hell. So I shut mine eyes, because I would not be bewitched with her looks. And she railed on me, and I went my way.
Did you meet with no other assault as you came?
When I came to the foot of the hill called Difficulty, I met with a very aged man, who asked me what I was and whither bound. I told him that I am a pilgrim, going to the celestial city. Then said the old man, thou lookest like an honest fellow. Wilt thou be content to dwell with me for the wages that I shall give thee? Then I asked him his name and where he dwelt. He said his name was Adam the First, and that he dwelt in the town of Deceit. I asked him then what was his work, and what the wages he would give. He told me that his work was many delights, his wages that I should be his heir at the last. I further asked him what house he kept, and what other servants he had. So he told me that his house was maintained with all the dainties in the world, and that his servants were those of his own begetting. Then I asked if he had any children. He said that he had but 3 daughters, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, and that I should marry them all if I would. Then I asked how long he would have me to live with him, and he told me as long as he lived himself.
Well, and what conclusion came the old man and you to at last?
Why,
At first I found myself somewhat inclinable to go with the man, for I thought he spake very fair. But looking in his forehead as I talked with him, I saw there written, "Put off the old man with his deeds."
And how then?
Then it came burning hot into my mind. Whatever he said and however he flattered, when he got me home to his house, he would sell me for a slave. So I bid him forbear to talk, for I would not come near the door of his house. Then he reviled me and told me that he would send such a one after me that should make my way bitter to my soul. So I turned to go away from him. Just as I turned myself to go thence, I felt him take hold of my flesh and give me such a deadly twitch back that I thought he had pulled part of me after himself. This made me cry, "Oh, wretched man!" So I went on my way up the hill. And when I had got about halfway up, I looked behind and saw one coming after me, swift as the wind. So he overtook me just about the place where the settle stands.
Just there did I sit down to rest me. But being overcome with sleep, I there lost this roll out of my bosom.
Good brother, hear me out. So soon as the man overtook me, he was but a word and a blow, for down he knocked me and laid me for dead. When I was a little come to myself again, I asked him wherefore he served me so. He said because of my secret inclining to Adam the First. And with that he struck me another deadly blow on the breast and beat me down backward. So I lay at his foot as dead as before. So when I came to myself again, I cried him mercy. But he said, "I know not how to show mercy." And with that he knocked me down again. He had doubtless made an end of me. But that one came by, bid him forbear.
Who was that that bid him forbear?
I did not know him at first. But as he went by, I perceived the holes in his hands and in his side. Then I concluded he was our Lord. So I went up the hill.
That man that overtook you was Moses. He spareth none, neither knoweth he how to show mercy to those that transgress his law.